ప్రిలియూడ్ చాప్టర్ నెంబర్ 10 క్రిటికల్ అప్రిషియేషన్. ది ప్రిలియూడ్ మే బి కన్సిడర్డ్ యాజ్ ద ఫైనెస్ట్ ఫ్రూట్ ఆఫ్ వర్డ్స్వర్త్స్ పొయిటిక్ జీనియస్, బట్ ఇట్ అపియర్స్ టు బి క్వైట్ స్ట్రేంజ్ దట్ ద పోయెట్ కన్సిడర్డ్ ద పోయెమ్ యాజ్ ఎ మైనర్ పీస్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ పొయిటికల్ వర్క్. The poet considered the occasion of the creation of the poem is interesting. It derived from the projected recluse, from Coleridge's suggestion about the French Revolution, from Wordsworth's spontaneous poetry about his childhood. And what is more important, Wordsworth's rigorous self-inquisition. According to Coleridge, the poem on the growth of your own mind as the ground plot and the roots out of which the recluse was to have sprung up as the tree. Ernest de Chelino Count writes about the composition of the poem. It was in the early months of 1798 that Wordsworth conceived that idea of writing a history of the growth of his own mind, partly on the suggestion of Coleridge and spurred on by his enthusiastic encouragement. He had determined to compose a great philosophic poem to be entitled The Recluse, or Views on Man, Nature and Society. It seems probable that a rough draft of those lines, afterwards printed as the prospectus to excursion, was struck off in the first heat of this resolve. He had already written The Ruined Cottage and other verses, which would naturally find its place in his comprehensive scheme. Indeed, he wrote, I know not anything which will not come within the scope of my plan. In the eager confidence with which he embarked on the enterprise, he anticipated its completion in less than 2 years. But the paramount impulse not to be withstood soon gave way to doubt. Had he the strength to assume so awful a burden, would it not be wiser to await those malodies that bring a riper mind? Are his misgivings justly founded, or are they mere timidity and laziness, a subtle form of selfishness cloaked in humility and modest awe? The answer can only be found by taking stock of himself and examining how far nature and education have qualified him for his task. And so he wrote the prelude. In the summer of 1798, he had little time to give to it. But during the following winter, when he was in Germany, he wrote many of those passages which describe the experiences of his boyhood, and it is probable that book 1 and 2 were finished by the end of 1799. Then the poem was almost entirely laid aside till January 1804. When he began again in good earnest, it was completed in May 1805. Wordsworth himself wrote about the composition of the prelude in the preface to the first edition of the Excursion. Several years ago, when the author retired to his native mountains with the hope of being enabled to construct a literary work that might live, it was reasonable that he should take a review of his own mind and examine how far nature and education have qualified him for such employment. As subsidiary to his preparation, he undertook the record. In verse, the origin and progress of his own powers, as far as he was acquainted with them. The prefatory poem is biographical, conducts the history of the author's mind to the point when he was emboldened to hope that his faculties were sufficiently matured for entering upon the arduous labor which he had proposed to himself. The title of the poem. Wordsworth himself did not choose any title for the poem. His family and friends knew it only as a poem to Coleridge. Coleridge also refers to it as the Recluse, and it and the Friend as an unpublished poem on the growth and revolutions of an individual mind by Wordsworth. The title, The Prelude, under which it was published in 1850, was chosen by his wife Mary Wordsworth. However, keeping in mind the theme of the poem, the title is justified. In this regard, Edwin Morgan says, "It is rightly named The Prelude because it is the prelude to an unwritten poem. But in the business of preparing for that poem, it has drained off so much life from the imaginary work, still gestating in Wordsworth's mind, that we have another case of the child being father of man, even a child unborn." Subject and purpose. The Prelude is a poem which deals with poet's own early life and childhood. The purpose of the poem is twofold. First, a self-examination to find out if he was really a poet who could write something of perennial value. Secondly, a self-expression as he writes. "May my life express the image of a better time, more wise desires and simplest manners about the subject and purpose of the poem, Helen." Derbyshire observes, "In the Prelude, Wordsworth gives a record and he will vouch for the truth of it. Of that inner life out of which his poetry grew, he reveals a strange world, and the deeper we dive into it, the stranger it becomes. It is the full intense life which he lived through his senses as a child, and yet that he first tries to recapture and record, and the quality of that life makes it invaluable. This is the surprising thing, its sheer unquestionable spirituality. Most of us are moved at times by some beautiful aspects of nature. A radiant sunset or a moonlight cloudy sky to ask, what is the meaning of this sense that nature gives me of a life beyond sense? These feelings of an extraordinary beauty and mysterious power. Is there an ultimate spiritual power, and have I a spirit that can untie with it? The deepest layers of his experience are often exposed in roughly written drafts of passages afterwards abandoned, or much clarified and reduced before he found a place for them in his text." Garrod has also explained the purpose of the poem. "The purpose of the Prelude may indeed be said to be to search out, to seize and hold among the many seemingly alien and incongruous images of self cast off by reflection. The image of the poet's true being, of his slowly self-realizing individuality, of that in him in virtue of which he is a dedicated spirit." Autobiographical notes. The Prelude is in fact an autobiographical poem. The subtitle Growth of the Poet's Mind clearly indicates that the poem deals with the poet's mind. Wordsworth himself says in the preface to The Excursion The preparatory poem, The Prelude, is biographical and contains the history of the author's mind. In the poem, Wordsworth tells us about his inner life, thoughts and sentiments, tastes and likings from earliest childhood to 1798. Both in the poem, Wordsworth has not maintained the chronological order of events of his life. Only intermittently does the narrative order coincide with the order of actual occurrence. The poem is shaped by a kind of internal logic of the growth of poet's mind rather than by the sequence of external events. P.M. Acker observes in this regard, The development is roughly chronological, but throughout the poem at significant points, reference is made back to his childhood. Contrasting later attitudes or illustrating important aspects of his theme, conversely, the adult Wordsworth is present even in Book 1, drawing conclusions and reflecting on the significance of his earliest experience. Wordsworth takes up even the small events that a less observant or retentive mind would have forgotten. Even such things as boating expeditions, chance meeting with old sailors, dreams, noise of the wind in the mountains, ash tree outside his window are important for him for a description. In the prelude, we find him tracing the links, joining them together, working out their meaning and what they have done to him. It is not surprising in view of the complications and originality of this undertaking that its drift is at times scarcely obvious, but even when we cannot quite follow his links, we feel that they are there even if he has not quite managed to bring them up from the subconscious level into the light of day. The themes of creative vision. The prelude, like various other poems, is a faithful record of Wordsworth's inner life and emotional experiences, and so it enables us to have a glimpse of the innermost recesses of the poet's soul. In fact, what Tintin Abbott tells us in brief about the vision of the poet, the prelude reveals to us in detail. Both these poems present the changing pattern of the poet's communication with nature and illustrate a perception which is central to all Wordsworthian thought. The prelude highlights three major changes in Wordsworth's mystic relationship with nature. In the first stage, the poet becomes conscious of the creative activity of his mind as it operates on what he sees. A plastic power abode within me, a forming hand at times. Rebellious, acting in a devious mood, a local spirit of his own at work, with general tendency, but for the most subservient strictly to external things with which it communed. In the second stage, the poet is aware of images within his mind, as if they had passed through the senses from an outer to an inner existence. Oft in this moment such a holy calm would overspread my soul, the bodily eyes were utterly forgotten, and what I saw appeared like something in myself, a dream, a prospect in the mind. In the third stage, the life of senses is totally suspended. The poet now experiences a mystical power of joy, a power, a mood, which has been explicitly expressed in Tintin Abbott. What stern and blessed mood in which the affections gently lead us on until the breath of his corporeal frame and even the motion of our human blood almost suspended, we are laid asleep in body and become a living soul. In the prelude also, Wordsworth experiences that blessed mood, that lost beyond the reach of thoughts and human knowledge to the human eye, invisible yet lived to the heart. Emotion in the prelude. Wordsworth is a poet of emotions and emotional experiences. For him, poetry takes its origin from emotion recollected in tranquility. He never made a present joy the matter of a song. In this regard, the views of W. Graham are worth quoting. To Wordsworth, even unpleasant sensations could, as part of later contemplation, give a kind of pressure, particularly as part of the process of artistic creation, the emotion of whatever kind and in whatever degree from various places, so that in describing any passions whatsoever which are voluntarily described in the mind, will often the whole be in a state of enjoyment. If this were not so, we may ask ourselves, how should we tolerate a Schatten, an Iago, or the madness of a Lear? But in the prelude, Wordsworth is thinking chiefly of the effect of memory in his own life, and the prelude itself a deliberate cultivation of memories in order that they may become permanent. On fading recollections at this hour, the heart is almost mine with which I felt that such collections can bring solace is, of course, the theme is a theme of two well-known short poems, I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud and Solitary Reaper. It was Wordsworth's experience that the pattern of these remembrance things was not clear at the time, but that they passed unnoticed into the mind where they were. Doomed to sleep until maturer seasons called them forth to impregnate and not elevate the mind. The idea is a difficult one to grasp because Wordsworth seems to be saying that the matter is not as simple as remembering something happy when you happen to feel sad, but that felt in the blood and felt along the heart. These recollections enter and inform the total personality of a man, so that he becomes tranquil and has a balanced view of life, as well as an impulse towards something a little better than himself. The soul remember how she felt, but what she left, remembering not, retains an obscure sense of possible sublimity whereto, with growing faculties, she doth aspire. That is why, in the prelude and for the remainder of his days, Wordsworth was loath to quit those recollected hours that have the charm of visionary things, those lovely forms and sweet sensations, and throw back our life and almost make remotest infancy a visible sense on which the sun is shining. As an epic poem. When the prelude was actually composed by Wordsworth, he had in his mind an epic mission. He wanted to sing song of sublime ideas, some philosophic song of truth that cherishes our daily life with meditations, passionate form of deep recreation in man's heart, immortal verse, thoughtfully fitted to the orphan lyre. Like Milton, Wordsworth too had his own concept of the epic subject. As Ernest D. Shelincourt puts it, Wordsworth was in evident agreement with Milton on the true nature of the epic subject. Both of them repudiated military exploits. He said the only argument heroic deemed in the desire to bring within its confines a more spiritual conflict. Only the pedant will descend from their conception, and those who regard the mind of Wordsworth as both great in itself and essentially representative of the highest. The imaginative type of mind will recognize its adventures as a fit theme for epic treatment. Wordsworth said, epic poetry of the highest class requires in the first place an action. With a grand or sublime train of consequence, it next requires the intervention and guidance of being superior to man. And lastly, no subject but a religious one can answer the demand of the soul in the highest class of the species of poetry. From this point of view, the prelude is very near to an epic. In lines 146 to 271 of the first book, for example, when he is considering the possibility of an action with a grand or sublime train of consequence, we feel this close kinship with Milton in his similar dilemma. And the many echoes from the Paradise Lost throughout the poem confirm the impression. The prelude has something of epic structure. It is laid out not unlike an epic, with episodes, vicissitudes, and a climax. In 14 books, Wordsworth obviously had classical models in mind when constructing the prelude. But typically enough, this poem has 14 books, not the conventional 12 of Paradise Lost or the Aeneid. The prelude also differs from the traditional epic in that it has no real story. It is not directly concerned with the outward events, though they play their part. Its action takes place not in the outside world, but in the poet's mind. Style and imagery. The prelude is written in blank verse. Wordsworth's blank verse, no doubt, lacks the Shakespearean quality of shifting metaphor or Miltonic one of the emphatic placing of keywords, sometimes of opposite meaning. But it is also to be noted that at his best he combines mass and momentum, buoyancy and impetus in his blank verse. The invocation to the wisdom and spirit of the universe in the first book of the prelude is a fine example of his exalted blank verse. Wisdom and spirit of the universe, thou soul that art the eternity of thought, that givest to forms and images a breath and everlasting motion not in vain. By day or starlight, thus from any first dawn of childhood didst thou intervine for me the passions that build up a human soul, not with the mean and vulgar works of man, but with high objects that enduring things, with life and nature purifying thus the elements of feeling and thought, and sanctifying by such discipline both pain and fear until we recognize a grandeur in the beatings of the heart. The passage reveals that Wordsworth's blank verse is apparently simple and austere, but actually it is of a surprising richness beneath the surface. It reflects the interchange between mind and nature and provides a context in which moments of intensity may be related to the ordinary world. Another marked feature of the prelude is the distinctive use of imagery. The distinctive things about the images of the prelude, says Lindenberger, is that they provide the basic setting for the poem. Water, islands, mountains, bridges and growing things, the dominating images that Wordsworth has frequently used are those of wind, water, cloud and island. The images of wind and water, by virtue of their flowing and transforming quality, allow Wordsworth free range between the observable world and the transcendental reality which it tries to make visible to us. In fact, these images act an intermediary between the two worlds. They also serve as manifestations of power and vitality in the universe. Island also forms the background of Wordsworth's natural descriptions. We hardly think of the island as a symbol in the following lines. When summer came, our pastime was on bright half holidays to sweep along the plain winder mere, with rival oats and the selected bourne, was now an island musical with birds that sang and ceased not, now a sister isle, beneath the oak umbrella's convert, sown with lilies of the valley like a field. And now a third small island where survived in solitude the ruins of a shrine. Further, as Lindenberger observes, unlike the wind, water and mountains, which dominate the poem's scenic background, the cavern functions chiefly as a metaphor. In fact, a literary submerged metaphor, one which we sense but dimly through the unnamed depths and under agents which Wordsworth has such frequent occasion to invoke. Thus, the prelude is one of the most important poems of Wordsworth. It reveals the poet's original genius, which he defined as the introduction of a new element into the intellectual universe. In the views of Helen Derbyshire, may be quoted, the prelude represents the height of Wordsworth's poetic achievement in one direction. It's a long poem and a great poem conveying high meditation on the basis of personal experience. It has a unity of design which depends upon the essential integrity of its subject. That subject is not my life but the making of a poet. Its virtue lies in its power to life. that Edward Lee, Edward Irving speaking of Wordsworth is one of his sermons called The Deep Unfathomable Secrecies of Human Thought.